Good afternoon, and it's time for Northland Views from the Flagstaff Studios of Sun Sounds of Arizona. This is your reader, Bethany Williams, and today I have stories from around northeastern Arizona. I'll let you know what paper and what edition they're from as I go. The first one I've decided to read is a White Mountain Sheriff's Posse Pony Express ride. Starts April 24th. This was published on April 17th, 2024. And written by Tony Gibbons. 17 members of the White Mountain Sheriff's Posse will be saddling their horses and heading out on the 52nd annual Pony Express ride starting Wednesday, April 24th. At the Lakeside Post Office and ending at the Tonto Basin Post Office Friday, April 26th. Most of the 150-plus mile journey will be covered on back roads, with riders leaving the White Mountains on the Rim Road down to the junction that continues their journey through the White Mountain Apache Tribe lands, into Young, and then on to Tonto Basin. WMSP member and longtime Pony Express rider Richard Bilby said, "We like to mix up the ride and pick somewhere different each year. The first night we'll be camping at Iron Mine, and the second night we will camp at Reynolds Creek. We pick camping areas with plenty of water for the horses." While the ride is about carrying and delivering mail as sworn-in mail carriers, it's also a great training exercise for the WMSP, which is one of the main search and rescue posses in the White Mountains. Sometimes when we're on this ride, someone will break a girth strap or harness, which is easier to fix or replace now rather than at go time, when we're looking for a kid or on the steep side of a mountain, said Bilby. Plus, the ride is a lot of fun for a fantastic group of cowboys. The nights around the campfire are spent telling stories. In the morning, coffee is brewed in a huge coffee pot while biscuits cook over the fire. Bilby said he estimates they go through 150 cups of coffee every morning. The WMSP, which was formed in the 1950s, is under the direction of Navajo County Sheriff David Klaus. The roster includes 50 members, and the only ones allowed on the ride have to be part of WMSP or the NCSO detail. Bilby said Klaus provides an escort of 2 officers to maintain safety. The riders each cover a mile before loading up their horses and traveling to the next destination that's marked out by other members. Collection boxes, which are currently at the Sholo, Lakeside, and Pine Top post offices, Sholo City Hall, Pine Top Lakeside Town Hall, Sholo Elementary, and Blue Ridge Elementary, will be picked up on Monday, April 22nd. Postcards are available but require a stamp, or a letter can be sent as long as it has the required postage. Each piece of mail will be stamped with the WMSP Pony Express cancellation stamp. The swearing-in ceremony will be at, or will have been at, 8:30 a.m. on April 24th at the Lakeside Post Office at 1815 Jackson Lane. Stamped letters and cards can be handed to the WMSP Pony Express riders at that time as well. That was White Mountain Sheriff's Posse Pony Express Ride starts April 24th. On April 16th, we have, from the White Mountain Independent, we have Outstanding High School and Junior High Student Art featured at NPC Show by Leah Keenan of Northland Pioneer College. High school seniors Rayshawn Smith of Ganado High School, Callie Etzity of Holbrook High School, and Patrick Bond of Mogollon High School are the top awardees in the Talon Gallery at Northland Pioneer College's 38th Annual Juried High School Art Exhibit. The trio of student artists captured Best of Show Awards and Art Tuition Scholarships to NPC for the 2024 and 25 academic year. Jurying this year's show were NPC art faculty and Talon Gallery Director Magda Glusick, NPC Film and Digital Video faculty Nathan Kosib, and NPC Art faculty Peterson Yazzie. Commenting on the Best of Show winning oil pastel drawing, May, by Ganado High School senior Rayshon Smith, Kosub noted, "This is a gentle, lovely piece that draws the eye into a forest scene. The colors in this piece glow," he added. "They give a sense of will-o'-the-wisps, of the twilight, of the setting sun." "The brightness is muffled by the trees," he said, "which are portrayed beautifully. There's a shape and quality to them. The piece is cinematic in its use of color and light. It's a warm piece. It's a space that I would like to spend time in." The work has a mostly shadowed foreground with a slope with silhouetted trees, except for a single daisy flower. But then the background is warmly lit with a distant person in a red dress. Kaliatsiri of Holbrook High School took Best of Show accolades for the acrylic painting Lily's Whispering Reverence. Yazzie said, "The painting's strong composition and dynamic brushwork make this piece exceptional. From the water's reflection to the pathway created by the floating lily pads, it creates a serene, welcoming atmosphere." He concluded, "The play of light and shadow within the setting make this piece delightfully compelling." And that piece has in the foreground a dark reflective pond with lily pads and pink blossoms sticking out of it, and the far shore has trees on it in the background. The penciled artwork Mental Health Awareness by Patrick Bonn of Mogollon High School also received Best of Show honors. Glusick said the jurors were drawn to the artwork because of the way Bonn handled the challenging subject matter. "There are a lot of creative things done here," she said. "With shading, we get the sense that this figure has weight and exists in space, yet around the figure, there's a sort of flatness and a lot of texture created with the text." She added, "We get the sense that the figure exists in real space and real life, but at the same time, the figure is also existing within their own mind. We imagine the words and phrases bouncing around in their head, and we're not sure what's going to happen next." The art creates a sense of tension with the words floating around the figure, she said. "The darker words, which are heavier both visually and conceptually, are coming down onto the figure. In contrast," she says, "the lighter words are visually lighter and are radiating from the figure." She concluded, "I'd like to think of them as radiating towards the figure, an extension of support." And that work is mainly in black and white. Well, white and beige. But, you have a figure sitting in the center with knees pulled up and arms on knees, head down on the arms. And at the top, you have phrases like, "What a loser, you're too skinny, I'm a waste of life, and biggest of all, I would be better off dead. But beneath, in lighter letters, are things like, "You have so much to live for, I'm here for you, you got this, you're perfect." In addition to the top three Best of Show awards, senior Lindsay Thomas of Ganado High School placed first in the painting category, along with Demetrius Robinson, a sophomore at Pinyon High School, who took home two first place awards. Second place awards in the painting category went to Menelana Lesure, a senior at Round Valley High School, and Lily Williams, a senior at Holbrook High School. Fellow Holbrook senior Isabel Salazar took home a third-place award. Honorable mentions went to Best of Show winner Callie Etzidi of Holbrook, along with Micah Olivar of Dischi Boca High School and Samantha Slade of Snowflake High School. In the mixed media category, Chloe Chun, a senior at Xavier College Preparatory, placed first, and Andrea Denny, junior at Pinyon High School, took second. For the 3D art category, Round Valley High School sophomore Seth Geisler placed first, and Pinyon High School sophomore Natalia Nalwood took second. A first place digital art award went to William Lee, a sophomore at Snowflake High School. A total of 64 entries were selected for this year's juried show. "There's such a great breadth and variety in all of the different artistic expressions," said Glusick. "A special thanks to all of the art teachers in our area for promoting creativity and artwork with your students and for encouraging them to enter this exhibition." The full exhibit can be enjoyed virtually at the NPC Talon Gallery webpage, npc.edu/hs-show-2024. For more information on this and upcoming MPC art exhibitions, contact Glusek at 928-532-6176 or email magda.glusek@npc.edu. That was Outstanding Secondary School Student Art featured at NPC. You're listening to Northland Views on Sun Sounds of Arizona. Sun Sounds of Arizona has been bringing you audio access to print information for over 40 years. Our website is sunsounds.org, where you can listen to our live streams or find individual episodes on demand, both of which you can also now do on our Sun Sounds app, which you can find in app stores. From the White Mountain Independent, published on the 23rd, Navajo County Details Elaborate Voting Security Measures by Peter Aylsher. Navajo County did its best on Tuesday to convince a host of critics that elections are safe, secure, and protected against fraud. A group of people concerned about the security of elections has appeared frequently at Board of Supervisors meetings to argue the county should eliminate vote counting machines, mail-in ballots, and drop boxes for early ballots. The group packed the board chambers on Tuesday to demand changes and threaten retaliation if supervisors don't act. The comments came before a presentation on election security by County Manager Brian Layton. The county, several weeks ago, opened a portal on its website for people to submit questions about the elections process with the help of Republican and Democratic party leaders. The county got about 100 questions, which Layton wrote a report to answer. Layton answered most of the concerns with a step-by-step review of how the ballots are handled, counted, and tabulated. He also said the county is setting up an expanded camera system to monitor ballot drop boxes where people can place their early mail-in ballots before Election Day. Layton's key points included, Navajo County uses only paper ballots. The county conducts a hand count audit of randomly selected results to double-check the machine count. The county uses a real-time system to verify voter identity and ensure they haven't voted twice. The system includes multiple checks and balances of the ballot boxes. The county's election results can only be reported to the Secretary of State on an encoded direct line from a single computer. State law requires all counties to provide the vote-by-mail option. The county continually updates its vote-by-mail rolls, but must follow detailed state procedures when it comes to dropping people from the rolls. Mojave County conducted a hand count experiment with just 800 ballots and concluded it would have to hire 300 to 500 workers, spend $1.5 million, and wait for days, perhaps a week, for results if it shifted to a full hand-count-only system. And the Board of Supervisors has very limited legal authority to change the way it conducts elections. The group demanding the elimination of the vote-counting machines and mail-in ballots has echoed claims made by lawsuits by several losing statewide Republican candidates claiming widespread fraud in the 2022 elections. The claims of vote fraud have been repeatedly rejected by courts at every level of appeals, all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court. The candidates have been ordered to pay court costs due to the lack of evidence presented. In one case, courts found that one candidate defamed the Republican Maricopa County recorder by claiming he allowed election fraud to affect the governor's race outcome. No one who spoke mentioned the problem of low turnout in American elections, especially compared to most other advanced democracies. Things like mail-in voting, vote centers, and other efforts to make voting easier are largely intended to address that problem. The U.S. turnout in the 2020 election was a relatively high 64%, about 10% above the long-term average, according to the Pew Research Center. In off-year elections, it's more like 40% and even lower in local elections. By contrast, voter turnout is between 74 and 90% in Israel, Brazil, Taiwan, Netherlands, Iceland, Australia, Denmark, South Korea, New Zealand, Belgium, the Philippines, Sweden, Argentina, Indonesia, Peru, Turkey, and Uruguay. At the end of the meeting, Supervisor Daryl Seymour said, "I want to thank citizens for being here today. I trust every one of these supervisors and our employees. We are your friends. We work with you. We represent you. We're here to make sure elections are fair and honest as best we can. Wouldn't it be amazing if we got a 90% turnout instead of only 30%? Encourage people to get out to vote. Don't encourage them, their vote doesn't count, because I can tell you in Navajo County, every vote counts." The parade of people who spoke during the public comment period all said they have come increasingly to doubt the legitimacy of elections. Some warned the supervisors they would face a voter revolt if they didn't act to make elections more transparent and secure. One speaker said the county should do a much better job of dropping voters from the early voting rolls if they don't vote in consecutive elections. Another speaker quoted at length from the Constitution and concluded the supervisors should refuse their $80,000 salaries and serve without compensation to give back some of what you received to the public good. The chairman of the Navajo County Libertarian Party complained that when the county reached out to the Republican and Democratic parties for input, it ignored the Libertarian Party. Moreover, state laws on ballot access mean that Libertarians and other third-party candidates must get 20 or 30 times as many signatures on nominating petitions as Republican and Democratic candidates. It's almost impossible for us to get onto the ballot. That's why there's never been a Libertarian candidate in this county. At least the supervisor should give equal access to the ballot for everybody. The Libertarian animal is the porcupine. We're going to be a pain in your butt, he said. Another speaker addressed the crowd instead of the supervisors. He said every supervisor should resign if there's a single fraudulent vote cast in the upcoming election. I ask all of you to hold these bureaucrats accountable. If there is one bit of fraud, ask them to resign. One vote, and I know you guys know there's fraud here. There is fraud. We're going to find it at times and hold you accountable. Jim Vance said, each of you is duty-bound to interpose, no matter how you look at the machines. They're not clear and transparent. What needs to be instituted is same-day voting with a hand count on election day. This has worked for us for 200 years. It's the duty of the people to see that takes place. John Major said, one thing that concerns me is the drop boxes throughout the county. The ballot drop boxes, which are not secured, they're not monitored. And in many cases, there's no surveillance cameras to prevent ballot box stuffing or other hanky-panky. That's something we can and need to change. Another speaker complained the people in attendance wouldn't get to offer a point-by-point rebuttal or ask questions after Layton's presentation. He noted that he was a precinct worker when the very first person was a member of the White Mountain Apache tribe with her mail-in ballot in her hand, only to be told that she had already voted. That's ludicrous. She had her bloody ballot in her hand when she walked in the door. Layton later said the county had looked into that case and the woman had in fact voted previously but had forgotten. This drew laughter and jeers from the crowd. And this in turn prompted Chairman Jason Whiting to warn the people not to interrupt Layton's presentation, or they would be escorted out of the room by a deputy. Jerry Hubbard said he simply doesn't believe that the voting machines and the vote counting machines aren't connected to the internet and aren't being hacked, despite reports by left-wing writers. He said no one believes every other three-letter agency, like the Department of Justice or the Federal Bureau of Investigation. Layton's presentation detailing the elaborate election security measures, lack of internet connections that would make it possible to hack the voting machines, and lack of evidence of more than a handful of miscast ballots seemed to win few converts in the crowd. However, he said that Mojave County's trial of hand counting demonstrated the impracticality of the proposal. Based on Mojave County's experience, the county would have to find 500 volunteers or temporary workers to run an election, and still probably couldn't meet the state deadlines for voting for reporting results. Worse yet, an audit of Mojave County's hand count found an error rate in excess of 5%. A similar effort to hand count ballots in a Nevada county found an initial error rate of 23%. The supervisors thanked people for attending and largely backed Layton and the election department. Supervisor Fern Benally, whose district mostly includes the Navajo Reservation, said the vote centers, mail-in voting, and drop boxes help ensure people living on the reservations have a chance to vote. "The Navajo have a lot of problems voting because of transportation," she said. "They have to travel long distances. It's not like in the cities where you pop over and vote. Sometimes my people can't vote because of the mud, and it's not easy mud. It's thick, clay mud, and a lot of them can't get to the polling place when it rains. Having drop-off ballot boxes and mail-in ballots are very important to my constituency, because I don't want them to be disenfranchised." Supervisor Alberto Peschlake said he was impressed by the level of security. "This was a very comprehensive presentation and an eye-opener to me, knowing we have so much security, and I do trust what our election team does." Supervisor Whiting said, "Thank you for sharing this information. I've heard that Mojave County wanted to move to doing a hand count and then backed away. This explains it. You provided some good information at the end of the day to ensure there is confidentiality and that our elections are secure." That was Navajo County Details Voting Security Measures. In a piece from the Payson Roundup, published on April 22nd, "Systemic Problems Between Town Departments Puts Businesses in the Middle," by Michelle Nelson. Conflicting dictates from town departments have driven at least one major business and property owner to divest from Payson. Jeff Wolfe turned the historic rundown Pieper Mansion on Main Street into a rental property. But after conflicting town requirements, expensive added upgrades, and long delays in getting permits, the frustrated business owner and property developer said he gave up and sold assorted properties. Unfortunately, Wolf's tale of frustration echoes other complaints about the Payson process for approving both new developments and business upgrades. For years, small business owners at Rim Country Chamber Luncheons have complained about confusing, seemingly capricious actions between departments and staff that have cost them heavily. Town officials have told people upgrading their property, study the town codes and ask good questions. Others reassure business owners they only need to call one department, only to have another department override the first. For instance, the MHA Foundation built a park for Rim Country, complete with playing fields, snack bar, and other amenities, but had to wait for a year and a half to get permission from the town engineering department to drill a couple of holes so it could hook up to existing sewer lines. The town's requirements increased the cost of the park by several $1 million. But even when other businesses complain to reporters about the confusing town approval processes, they generally speak only off-the-record conversations for fear of angering town inspectors and development officials. But Wolf was so frustrated that once he sold the mansion, he spoke about a town approval process that ultimately convinced him to sell. The Roundup has filed a public records request for a letter of complaint Wolf said he wrote, as well as other documents, So far, the town has not filled that request. The roundup also asked for comment from town staff, but as of press time has not gotten a response. A year ago, Wolf and his wife upgraded an office building they own on Main Street. They already owned several commercial and residential properties around town, including the Pieper Mansion. Wolf's wife's family once owned the old mansion decades ago and also ran it as a bunkhouse. Back then, they hosted cowboys, not short-term rental guests. Wolf said he was caught between conflicting advice and requirements. The town's community development staff would say one thing. Then the engineering department would come in with rulings and demands. It started when the couple wanted to fix up the front of the property with pavers. They hoped the upgrade would improve the safety of the entrance for customers. The town's community development office said they were free to proceed with proper permits. The improvements wouldn't trigger a need to upgrade many other aspects of the building itself, which was in a historic district and grandfathered in, so it didn't have to meet a long list of standards. Wolf said all went well, until Larry Halberstadt, the town's engineer, reached out to the Wolfs. He said, "Since we did the upgrade, we were no longer grandfathered," said Wolf. This meant Wolf had to upgrade a whole of things that had previously been grandfathered in. For instance, the engineering department directed Wolf to change the direction of their parking from north-south, as most businesses with parking out front on Main Street have, to east-west. Moreover, the engineering department said the Wolfs, had to add flower beds. "It just didn't make sense," said Wolf. He feared passing cars would tear off a customer's car doors, or worse, hit a customer. "No one else has parking in front of their offices like that," he said. Next, Halberstadt demanded the Wolfs put in thousands of dollars of drainage culverts. "It got crazy," said Jeff. A garden shed proved the final straw. Community Development told Wolf he didn't need a permit to add a flower shed to the Pieper Mansion property. But then Halberstadt showed up and ordered him to stop building. "We decided to sell the mansion," he said. "It's now owned and operated by someone else." Building on Main Street poses special problems since it's a historic district, which imposes a lot of extra conditions on tearing down or upgrading existing historic buildings. Wolf maintains the engineering department won't give business owners a break, even if retrofitting would bankrupt the business. Wolf maintains that more than a year ago, Halberstadt stormed out of a meeting saying he would issue no more permits for the project. As of print time, that permit has yet to be discussed again. That was systemic problems between town departments put businesses in the middle. From the Payson Roundup. That's all the time I have for the Northland Views program from the Flagstaff Studios of Sun Sounds of Arizona. Thanks for listening. Your reader is Bethany Williams, and coming up next, it's the Arizona Republic.